This is Joe Bob Briggs, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for November 1st, 2022. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Saintly Chip Essenfly.
Yeah, right. We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And hopefully there's more information out there. Some misinformation at the beginning of the show there, Chip. Saintly Chip Hessenflow. Yeah, okay.
This is going to be huge, Steve. Huge.
It is election season, isn't it? Let's tell the truth. Everybody tell the truth. All the politicians come together and tell the truth.
Well, today is All Saints Day, Steve.
And All Souls Day tomorrow. So we had Halloween yesterday. Happy Halloween to everybody that celebrates that. Happy All Saints Day, the celebration of all of the saints, the people that we admire for their skills. And then tomorrow, All Souls Day, where we remember all of our family members who have passed away.
And Steve, when do we discuss diabetes?
As my students bring in a lunchbox full of candy every day this week, that's when we discuss diabetes, my friend.
You must love those sugar crashes, Steve.
All week long.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Hey, Chip, did you make it to the movie theater this week?
Steve, I did make it to the theater. I went to the Alamo Draft House here in the City of Oaks, and it was lovely.
Yeah, we've talked about this week in and week on now, because you have this Alamo Draft House next to you. This is the premier place to go see a movie nowadays.
It absolutely is. If you are in the Raleigh area, you should go to here. If you've got an Alamo Draft House in your city, how lucky you are. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we have a location available in South Barrington. So if Alamo Draft House is listening to us, go ahead and open it there.
South Barrington. Woo! You got to see a movie this week. This is a historic story. 1955 is the setting for Till, the story of Emmett Till, and more specifically, the story of Emmett Till's mother in the aftermath of his brutal murder.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with the story, it's part of American history. It's part of the civil rights movement, and it certainly is a sad, sad story. We have a 14-year-old boy in 1955 who wants to go down from Chicago to meet his cousins and hang out for the summer. He arrives. He gives a catcall to a lady at a store.
Allegedly.
Well, in this movie, he did.
Okay.
And he is picked up and brutally murdered. Hmm. Thank goodness for the filmmaker. Thank goodness for the filmmaker of not putting that on screen.
Yeah.
We got to, because it really could get sadistic. Mm-hmm. But we did not get that. But this is really, really heavy material. We really need to know. This is a 14-year-old boy who makes questionable statement to a white woman, a black man to a white woman down in Mississippi. She tells some people they come pick him up. Hmm. I don't know if he's an uncle, but anyway, he is choosing between protecting his family and this one child that they take off. And that he really struggles with that. You can imagine the mom. It's the father died as part of the military and died. He's got his own story, interestingly enough.
Hmm.
But the body is lost. They find the body down in Mississippi. They ship it back up to Chicago. And the mom basically sees what they did to her son. The body is bloated. It has been tortured. Mm-hmm. And she agrees to, as it's her choice, to have an open casket funeral.
Mm-hmm.
To see this grotesque child and to basically show what they did to her child. And Jet Magazine, which was a magazine from Chicago that marketed itself to the African-American community, basically prominently displays this. And this becomes news. This has becomes part of the civil rights movement.
Big turning point in that civil rights movement, that, that they can demonstrate this is the ugly side of this conversation we've been having.
We also get the NAACP and their network. We can learn a little bit about how that works. We also learn a little bit about how some of the other Black families were working down there and were also being, there's voter suppression. Basically, there was a get out the vote campaign in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. While many Black families were struggling with any number of things, Mississippi was particularly harmful. Still, this is 1955. This is, you know, 90 years after the Civil War, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're still dealing with that. And we also, you get a little bit of play with the Great Migration, where Black families moved up north to basically escape the South. And Chicago was a beneficiary of that. Mm-hmm. Jazz is part of that, a whole bunch of other parts of this. This is not the greatest film ever.
Okay.
This is a story that if you're not familiar with it, it's something you should be familiar with. It is part of American history. I'm going to say 65 out of 100 for as far as how I would rate this film. I'm glad I sat through it. The families that I watched it with certainly were there because they had interest. This is a movie that I'm assuming they will put up for awards. I'm not sure if it's an award-winning film, okay. But this is an important film that would go with a whole bunch of films that have been released over the last 10 years or so. And I do want to mention something that I thought of early in the film. You're introduced to Whoopi Goldberg. She plays the mother.
Okay.
And I immediately said, oh, why is this important? Well, Steve, when we were young, The Color Purple came out. Mm-hmm. Whoopi Goldberg was in that. So there is a connection there. There's a lot in this movie about duty. There's a lot in this movie about just broken promises. Mm. There's, you know, we think about the American dream and how a group of people still were struggling with just getting the opportunity to participate, and how part of the United States, Mississippi, being that just really, they just created such hardship on this group of people. And Emmett Till just happened to be, you know, sadly, his life taken from him way too young.
And this is my favorite era of American history, the civil rights movement, the coming together of the American people looking at this situation going, this is wrong. We need to make this stop. This is ugly. This is not who we are. We need to make a change, and coming together to make that change. Our world is so different now as a result of the work that was done around this tragedy of Emmett Till.
Well, society continues to evolve, redefine what freedom is, and what liberty is. And, you know, think about the gay rights movement, think about what some of the things going on at this point. You know, if you're a person who feels that you are, my goodness, it's really hard to say that the color of your skin makes you different, but for this, you know, for Black Americans, certainly it did. Mm-hmm. Maybe it still does, but any group that identifies as more unique certainly has more freedom today than they did in the past. And my goodness, we've got the World Cup going on. Imagine being a person who is not of, you know, the faith or not of that group of people over there and the hardship that they're going through. While
important story,
society is not perfect, it's certainly, this is a story about the growth of the United States from that period of time. Sadly, we had to deal with, you know, a child's death to make this to bring a spotlight on it.
Yeah, that is a frustrating piece of the story for sure, that we had to have this one moment of pain in order to get to the idea of freedom.
All right, so this, I'm going to bring up a couple things on it. I really like the casting of this film. The lighting of it was great. The rooms that they filmed in are much bigger than like housing would be at that time. And the clothing was certainly much nicer than the clothing probably of the time. One of the other decisions that the director made was, you can imagine how language, particularly a Southern dialect, would impact how people would review this film. Mm-hmm. And the director decided to make it I'm going to use a Midwestern dialect, just a regular dialect of American English. Thank goodness, because if it was something else, it certainly
would have been distracting at least.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a lot of decisions that were made for the betterment of the viewer.
Okay. The storytelling, the being able to tell this story is important. I know the story of Emmett Till because of my links to the Chicago area. His final resting place is a moment's drive from my childhood home. And this story is something that I've known for a long time. And keeping that story alive and telling that story so that future generations have this knowledge is important.
And just to put it in perspective, I became aware of Emmett Till's story for the first time, I'm guessing, Steve, 1991. Okay. I was an adult. So this wasn't taught to me as a young person, at least as I remember.
Interesting. But wow. I'm glad this movie exists. I hope that it's a movie that people will see, and I hope that the brutality of it was presented in such a way that it is shocking, but not too shocking.
Not distracting. Yeah. If you remember The Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's choice on the brutal beating of Christ in that. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness this was not the depiction in this film. Good. The beating, you could hear it. It took place in the building away from you. You got to see flashing lights. Thank goodness. No one wants to sit through such a sadistic moment.
Right.
Steve, we got a movie coming up that we want to review.
Are you an older woman who's been smoking for the majority of your life? That's a great transition, Chip. You got to see Louis Armstrong's Black and Blues. This is on Apple TV. Tell me about this one.
This is a really fun movie. It is about the history of Louis Armstrong, who is the father of jazz. We get all these. This is a documentary, by the way. It's a talking movie, Steve. And we get wonderful artists who get to tell the story of Louis Armstrong. And Louis Armstrong grew up in a time where Black men, in fact, this is another civil rights type of story. Mm-hmm. Louis Armstrong got to travel the world, bringing jazz to the world is really what he got to do. Mm-hmm. But he grew up in New Orleans. And Wynton Marsalis gives a story about how he used to make fun of Dixieland jazz. He goes, I can't believe they would, you know, basically it was considered not an art form on the level that like Wynton Marsalis would play music.
Okay.
And it was music made for the general public, all this other stuff. But, you know, you've got to realize you got this transition from what we would say is, you know, one time to another. And Louis Armstrong was that person. He became a band leader. He traveled the world. He was celebrated everywhere he went. And then he came back to New Orleans, where he was at the time not allowed to stay in the hotels he was playing. Yeah. There was this division. And there is this great part where the discussion was, he came back to New Orleans. He's getting ready to give a concert. And the person who's going to introduce him is a white male. And he says, I can't introduce this Black person. Hmm. And he steps off the stage. And Louis Armstrong comes in and sings a song that's basically a welcoming. And certainly does everything he needs to do. Because After that, he insisted that any place he plays, he be allowed to stay. So he was slowly breaking the color barrier. And that was pretty important because, you know what? He was the hottest ticket in town.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this unique, grovelly sound. Whit Marcellus gives another talk about how they would make fun of sort of the jazz that Louis Armstrong was playing until he tried to match the notes. And he recognized, like, holy cow, I can't hold the notes like that. He's playing at, I'm using high C's. If I get the music part wrong, I'm so sorry. I am an amateur on music history and how to play. But anyway, he talked about how difficult it was to hold those and what a skilled musician he was. And, you know, he has this classic voice. There's interviews that Louis Armstrong gives in the film where Michael Douglas and Dick Cavett are interviewing him, and he talks a little bit about how times have changed and what he's experiencing now. And one of the things that Louis Armstrong had were lots and lots of recordings. He loved the reel-to-reel recording, and he felt that he needed to record conversations, which he archived in his study in New York. And he wanted those to be available so one day, if somebody wanted to write about him, that he would have his own words available and his own feelings on it. And so one of the things that Louis Armstrong did very well was any place he went, and they would ask him questions about politics and this and that. He goes, well, I don't know anything about anything except for playing music, you know, basically deflecting those conversations. But he had really strong opinions. And those strong opinions come across in his private conversations, but not his public conversations. And that is something that we all could learn, is that our public face is always, it shouldn't be, many times should be welcoming. It should not be challenging local stuff. I didn't say every moment of that. I didn't say you had the ability to spew hatred to everyone.
Right.
But many times, you know, you just recognize what your role is in the moment and then work for what you would like elsewhere. So I just mentioned that Louis Armstrong initially wasn't allowed to play in some of the hotels that he played. I mean, that he was playing and he was booked to play. And that eventually became part of his contract that he will stay where he plays. Well, that breaks down the color barrier. So really an interesting guy. It's really a nice review of his life.
Okay.
And if you are a person that likes jazz or likes you know, documentaries about musicians and music, Louis Armstrong is certainly someone that you could learn a lot from. And just remember, Robin Williams, at the end of, was it Good Morning Vietnam? You know, plays a Louis Armstrong song, right? What a wonderful world.
What a wonderful world.
Sort of introduced it, Louis Armstrong, to our generation, where, you know, many times artists are lost. What I did think about immediately, though, was there's not a holiday song. Like, we're getting ready to have the Christmas season start, which means, I don't know, November 1st, like, some radio station's going to start playing Christmas music or holiday music. Louis Armstrong's really doesn't have one of those songs that's put on constant rotation. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
Because the man recorded so much.
And didn't get around to that piece of music history. Interesting.
Well, I mean, think about, I mean, we're listening to Bing Crosby and Perry Como and Nat King Cole and Johnny Mathis. I mean, Louis Armstrong certainly is a person that probably should have a standard that, I mean, it just seems to be just, you know, something that's just lost.
Interesting. I find it wonderful that you had this experience watching these two movies that certainly go together in a thematic 1950s race relations and civil rights movement conversation, and the change in America that was created by Emmett Till and his mother and Louis Armstrong and lots of other people like them in that time.
Yeah, times the past is a standard. Mm-hmm. And the present is better, but it's certainly not perfect.
And just wait till we get to our opening films this week, because boy, do they run on some of these same themes. Before we get there, though, I have to run through my annual viewing list, because you know what, Chip? It was Halloween, and there are certain movies that I watch every year. I got to see all of my Halloween favorites this week. Started with Army of Darkness from 1992, one of my favorite Bruce Campbell films. We discussed it on Sons and Shadows in July, but boy, is this silly, funny comedy mixed with horror in a slapstick Three Stooges sort of way. You watched really deep movies and I didn't.
Well, that's understood, Steve. How many times have you seen Army of Darkness?
I couldn't even guess. The time that I saw it in 2020 with Bruce Campbell in a drive-in is my favorite.
Steve, you got to see Young Frankenstein from 1974.
Sorry, Frankenstein. It's pronounced Frankenstein. 1974. This is, in my opinion, the best Mel Brooks movie of all of his films, and I love every one of them. Young Frankenstein is the one I keep going back to. I even broke out the coffee table book that he wrote about the filming of Young Frankenstein. He loves this film, and I love the story of Young Frankenstein.
Steve, I always wondered what happened to the hotel manager from Home Alone 2. Well, Steve, tell us about the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That's what keeps you up at night. What happened to the hotel manager from Home Alone 2? Rocky Horror Picture Show, Tim Curry. I love the story of Rocky Horror Picture Show coming from the London stage into a movie, engaging so many different ideas and societies and pieces of our world, and becoming a part of every theater nerd's Halloween since 1975.
And you get to see Susan Sarandon running around in her underwear.
There you go. Focus, Chip, focus. The Simpsons Treehouse of Horror happened this year again. Remember the Simpsons? They're still on TV, and they had a Treehouse of Horror this year. It was the first time that they told one story in the 22-minute episode. The story was called Not It. It is a parody of Stephen King's It, told in two parts, just like Stephen King's story. And this is a very good episode of The Simpsons that most people didn't watch because they haven't watched it in 20 years.
Well, it's interesting because the creativity seems to be lost in many of the recent seasons of The Simpsons. But the Treehouse of Horror is sort of a creative burst.
It is. And you can see how much energy they put into this particular episode every year. This is an annual tradition going back to 1990. Remember the 1990s, kids? This was great. I suggest that everybody go to their digital media and find the Treehouse of Horror and all the others. Every episode of the Treehouse of Horror for the last 35 years.
And speaking of large special effects budgets, Steve, the Muppets usually have the biggest.
So on my list of annual watches, the latest is The Muppets Haunted Mansion. This is a wonderful new movie. It came out last year at Halloween, and Gonzo is spending a night in the Haunted Mansion, and it is so well done. It goes on my list of my top five Muppet movies of all time, actually.
Top five.
Top five.
Steve, does Gonzo bring us checks?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course he does. And of course, there's just so much silliness and so much joy and great music in this one. I listened to the soundtrack of this one over and over again during the Halloween season.
Steve, you also got to see something from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Not just something, my friend. A historic moment in the Mystery Science Theater canon, the first ever Halloween special hit Mystery Science Theater this week, and their first ever 3D episode. This is The Mask from 1961, widely regarded as Canada's first horror film. This is a very Canadian, very nice horror movie from 1961.
Sorry.
We're apologizing the whole way through. Oh, The Mask is kind of scary. We're sorry.
See some poutine while you watch, Steve?
I did. If you watch my social media, you'll see that I did actually make poutine. That is true. I had poutine and bratwurst for this one. Sausage King of Chicago. So this was amazing. I love the creativity that the Mystery Science Theater crew brought to this one. Their first 3D movie. A very interesting film where the 3D effects only happen at certain points in the film, and the film instructs you to put on the 3D glasses through the narrative of the story. And it's fun. The Mystery Science Theater crew got to do their own 3D host segment at the end, and it might be my favorite host segment of the current season of Mystery Science Theater. They put a lot of energy into that, I don't know, 5-minute sketch, and it's great.
Well, would next year we look forward to Smell-O-Vision?
I still am waiting on an announcement for next year to see if the Mystery Science Theater crew is going to produce a new season. This season ends in December, and they've made this whole new Gizmoplex where we are paying an annual fee to get these shows, and I'm still waiting on an announcement of what they are going to produce for next year. I have high expectations, to say the least.
Well, Steve, before they move to Disney, what is Doctor Who up to?
Yeah, speaking of high expectations, Doctor Who, The Power of the Doctor aired on October 23rd, the final episode of the Jodie Whittaker era of Doctor Who, and this did not disappoint. Everybody on social media was telling stories of how much joy this brought. They brought in not only Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor, not only the surprise spoiler at the end where David Tennant, the 10th Doctor, is now the 14th Doctor as well, but also the 5th Doctor, 6th Doctor, 7th Doctor, and 8th Doctor. There were 6 different Doctors in this episode, and it did not disappoint.
Did they solve COVID, Steve?
They did. Bring together a bunch of doctors to solve COVID. They also brought along a huge long list of their companions. William Russell returned as Ian Chesterton, the first companion of the Doctor in 1963, and his appearance broke a Guinness World Record for the longest gap between TV appearances as the same character. 57 years, 3 months, and 28 days later, this amazing actor is back as Ian Chesterton, and tears were a part of all of this storytelling.
Well, the Guinness Books of World Records now has a new entry, Steve.
There you go. Opening this week, we've got some things that might be Guinness Book World Record holders. The first one is Weird, the Al Yankovic story. This is coming November 4th on Roku channel, roku.com.
Yeah, that's interesting. That'll be lost there. But this is interesting because it has such an incredible casting, Steve. Daniel Radcliffe will be playing the part of Al Yankovic, Steve.
Mm-hmm. And we've got so many other stars. The idea of this very, very silly, very weird autobiography, Weird Al did write this. He was involved with the filming. This is his biography, but it is not the story of Al Yankovic. It is a very silly, sarcastic rendition.
So we have Jack Black in this. We have Patton Oswalt playing in this. We have Rainn Wilson playing in it.
What character is Rainn Wilson? Dr. Demento. With a very fake beard, being Rainn Wilson for sure.
Will Forte is playing in this. Conan O'Brien is in this. Hulk Hogan is in this.
Of course
David Bowie is in this.
Well, David Bowie is dead, so I assume that any David Bowie that we see is archive footage.
Well, maybe. Madonna A person playing Madonna will be in this. I'm assuming that will be Weird Al's girlfriend for a period of time,
yes,
before something happens. And then someone is playing Oprah Winfrey, and there's Steve, because why not? This is going to be a silly, fun movie. Hopefully it's going to be a fun movie. And if you can find it, because it's on the Roku channel, good luck.
That is going to be a challenge finding this one. This one might be lost. Yes, there is a person playing Oprah Winfrey and an actor playing David Bowie. So that's that. Jack Black is playing Wolfman Jack. I look forward to seeing that. I'm already laughing at this. I look forward to this. I've been looking forward to this for months since it was announced. It is a full movie. It's an hour and 48 minutes. I am ready. I am ready for November 4th.
Steve, we have other movies coming out this week that potentially could be okay.
First one is called Armageddon Time. This is Anne Hathaway and Sir Anthony Hopkins telling the story of a coming of age in 1980, that pursuit of the American dream. And again, we talk about the racism of America and how we can work together toward that American dream.
Jewish people, Black people, and WASPy people, Steve, mm-hmm, all play in this. Let's get to our next one.
Dear Zoe, this is a young lady who is in the middle of an unimaginable loss and finds support from all sorts of different, very surprising sources, her biological father, and then, of course, a juvenile delinquent next door. This is Sadie Sink, and she is beginning her post-Stranger Things career with acting in this one.
Steve, we have a Blumhouse film.
Yeah, the reviews on Soft and Quiet include the word anxiety most of the time. This is an anxiety-inducing thriller from Blumhouse. It is a real-time action where we are going to see a very volatile chain of events surrounding the ideas of our current era.
How exciting will that be, Steve?
Just what we need in 2022. More anxiety about elections and our personal choices of politics.
Book it.
Brings us to our book at our book of the week. You, my friend, have been reading and you found an interesting book published in 2022 by Richard V. Reeves. This is Of Boys and Men, Why the Modern Male is Struggling, Why It Matters, and What to Do About It.
Well, there you go, Steve. You the father of two young men. Mm-hmm. I am the father of two young women. So this is about boys and men. I did some leadership training, and I work with college students who are freshmen and sophomores. This certainly addresses many of the challenges they're having right now. Mm-hmm. Richard V. Reeves is a writer, and he really takes some exploration of this. He's the father of boys, too, and trying to redefine or define what is causing some of the young men to really struggle right now. So we have been very giving to young ladies. My goodness, they still have a long way to go as far as some of the challenges they're having. But what's happening is the opportunities that are going on with these women seem to be taking advantage of them. There's more women in college than men. There's more women who are getting master's degrees than men. There's more women getting PhDs than men. Women are given opportunities and they're embracing those opportunities. And that's, you know, if we think about maybe our parents, mm-hmm, women finally started moving from being in the house to the workplace, and this movement that they have. This has been wonderful for the woman's experience.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is men are really struggling. Boys and men are really struggling. And part of what he's saying is that even when men were given the opportunity, even when men were given opportunities, they're choosing not to take it.
Hmm.
And that seems to be what's going on. One of the objectives of this book is to talk a little bit about some of the challenges they're experiencing. At the end, he's going to give you some proposed solutions. And we'll talk a little bit about that briefly. Steve, you work with young boys. Mm-hmm. Boys certainly have a different maturity than girls in middle school.
Middle school is definitely that giant divide in maturity where the girls are certainly much more mature. The boys are still very, very childish at the middle school level. And the girls sometimes struggle with communicating with boys at that level. Something that sometimes evens out during the high school years. But yeah, there is definitely a difference between the thinking at that age.
So one of the things that's brought up in this this book is as many challenges as these boys and men are having, if you are a Black American male, it's even greater. Sure. It's even greater. So the point of the book is not to say, hey, we should not be helping young women. The point of the book is we need to start recognizing that our boys and men are also having challenges. And for all the effort that's being put in, see if we can figure out a way to motivate these young men mm-hmm. into fulfilling their potential too. Man, that first part of the book where they start outlining some of the challenges, you can see it. You can see it all around you. There's a whole group of young men that are just not maturing. Mm-hmm. And they're not choosing to work, and they're choosing alternatives to their lifestyle that are not necessarily positive. And I shouldn't say everyone, I'm saying many. Mm-hmm. And it's enough that it is documented. It's being ignored because it becomes a sort of a hot topic. There's this idea that boys are given advantages that girls don't have. Mm-hmm. Boys' challenges may be different. Mm-hmm. Maybe different. And once again, we're at a point now where really we need to start addressing this earlier. Moms are seeing this, and dads are seeing this. This needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. I'm not really outlining so much of it. I think the book does a very good job at showing this. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the solutions that he is suggesting. And the first solution is to delay boys going to school mm-hmm. by 1 year. Mm-hmm. And part of it is that boys are just not maturing. They're just not mature enough. And if they delayed school for 1 year, and I think it may be how my youth would have benefited by delaying school for 1 year. We push so hard to get our kids into school. Mm-hmm. Boys may need an extra year.
And speaking of somebody with a late birthday, I was always that youngest kid in class. And if I had delayed 1 year, I wonder what my mental health and my thinking and my education would have done for that time.
Yeah, and I had a young daughter who was always the youngest in class. And I think about that too, whether mm-hmm. I should have just said, no, we're going to delay a year. And anyway, he's very strong on this as something to really consider. And then the other part is reintroducing shop class and things of that nature into school. He makes a number of other proposals, but the delaying of young boys into school seems to be the one that you can immediately kind of grab onto. Mm-hmm. This is where it kind of gets kind of strange, because when you start proposing help for these boys, it becomes a hot topic because it's like these people are not trying, and you shouldn't help them. So there's one group, they got to help themselves. And the other group says, well, if you help these young men, you're denying help to another group of people. And it's just, both of these are incorrect.
Right.
This
is not a zero sum game. I do not take away the time that I'm giving to my students when I focus on the students that need more time. Equity and equality are not the same.
And here's, that's right. This is not a zero sum moment. Mm-hmm. So one of the solutions that immediately you're thinking of as you're listening to me talk and making, not making a strong case for any part of it other than to read the book was, hey, what if we had boys' school and girls' school? You know, divide the sexes up. That's not going to help this. And in fact, that's I think he brings up a study that shows that doesn't help, that we still need mixed classes. It doesn't help to be all boys. It doesn't help to be all girls.
Mm-hmm.
So girls, once again, are embracing opportunities. They're growing from this. They're certainly fulfilling their lives. Boys right now are really struggling because their identities historically have been breadwinners, the hunters, all that stuff. And they may have to redefine themselves, learn some soft skills, and figure out where they need to fit into society. And even, this is the other part, even Scandinavian countries certainly have a lot more, when I say equality, where how things are presented early in life to young students. Men tend to, or boys tend to choose certain careers, women choose others. It's not 100% true, because in STEM careers, we're getting about 25% women. But what we're not getting, and the book points out, is 25% of men teaching school, 25% of men as nurses. And both of these careers certainly could benefit men and young men and students.
Mm-hmm.
And so even, there's a natural part that, part of a nature part of this, and there's part of a nurture part of mm-hmm. this. And so he really does a great job at kind of outlining some of the information. So it doesn't come across as like this,
toxic masculinity. There's a division there where some people see masculinity and make it so that it's important to someone, and who you are is important to your development. I, as an educator, the reason I am a teacher is because I saw male role models in education growing up and supporting my ideas and getting into the idea of how we can build each other up. I think of that all the time in class. I think of how I am supporting my male students.
And we're going to address that soon, because when we get to our next section, where we talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. And so if you are a male of color, mm-hmm. it's so important that we get teachers in schools, because certainly there are a large body of men who need male role models.
Absolutely.
And in addition to we use nursing as another example, we need the strength of the male in those careers also. And so men are going to have to kind of learn a new set of skills and also fit into society, maybe differently than they have done in the past.
Society changes. That word normal that we've been bandering around for the entire pandemic, that idea of going back, I don't think there's any going back. I think going forward, we need to work together and find best solutions for everybody.
Yeah. What is our goal for our young people? What is our goal for life? Is mm-hmm. for people to be comfortable with who they are, to express themselves, and to live good, fulfilling lives. And we have a better opportunity now than any point in the history of humanity. And this book outlines some of the challenges that our young men are having, and some of the things that we need to do to potentially solutions to solve that.
That ideal of gender equality, the Equal Rights Amendment is hitting its 100th year next year. The Equal Rights Amendment has still not been passed in the United States, and 100 years it's been sitting on the books waiting for enough states to agree to it. That equality and equity are not the same. We need to try to make our society better. That's the point of education. That is what I do, is I think about how am I improving my community, my state, my country, by giving every student what they need. And it's different for every student. So it sounds like you really suggest people read this book.
Yeah, I think he makes a very, very strong case. And I think it's one of the things that if you are a person who works with young people, or you were seeing the result of this. And if you're working with people who are in their 20s, young men, I think you're seeing some of the challenges that are going on. And so it's very important to find a way to reach these people and help them fulfill their life ambition.
That's Of Boys and Men, Why the Modern Male is Struggling, Why It Matters, and What to Do About It by Richard V. Reeves.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. There's so many things happening in the news. Let's talk about almost none of them. Elon Musk owns Twitter, Chip. What is going to happen with that?
Well, I think it will try to go back to being a place that there'll be free speech.
That is a frightening and at the same time very welcome idea. I want people to have free speech, but to what degree are we allowed hate and anger and all of the other things that are involved?
Sadly, that is part of free speech. You don't have to agree with it to defend the right to it. Okay. And many of the social media platforms certainly have a group of people who don't always agree with other people's opinion and are very willing to censor those opinions. Once again, we don't have to agree with it to allow it to go on. And I mean, Elon Musk immediately said this is not going to become a hellscape. So there's going to be some censoring, but, you know, on what level? It may be a little freer than it has been.
And that's been the big question of all of the social media is who gets to decide? Who decides what is hate speech? Who decides what is good and what is bad? And can we just open everything and let everybody have their own opinion? Is that okay?
Well, if you walk across many of our college campuses, Steve, you're going to see a lot of dissenting opinions. There are going to be people out there preaching whatever they need to preach. That doesn't mean you have to agree with it. It doesn't mean you have to stop and listen.
You do have to stop calling yourself the chief twit, however. Elon Musk, when he became the owner of Twitter, named himself Chief Twit. This is a nickname that Leo Laporte has been using for many years, and he's the head of This Week in Tech, Twit, and litigation will certainly result from this move. We'll see what happens with Twitter.
You're joking, right?
No, that's...
He's going to take him to court?
Again, there's already been some court filings for the use of the term twit with Twitter because they established that copyright before Twitter was established.
All right, so I'm going to give you some fun information. This is from memory. And this is about, all right, so there's, you remember Saab, the car company? A lot of academics, professors, use Saab automobiles. So here in the United States, so there's a demographic that certainly was far more liberal than the general public for cars. Tesla is owned by Elon Musk, right? So as high as the group was purchasing Saabs, it's even higher for Tesla. So it is a fascinating argument that the group of people that is most critical of Elon Musk purchasing Twitter is also the group that drives Teslas.
Interesting.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is fascinating. You might remember a time when we thought Elon Musk was fantastic, that his innovation in technology like Tesla was something that we followed for quite a long time. And now he owns Twitter. And boy, the tide has turned a little bit on Elon Musk lately, huh? So, Chip, you read this book all about how our education system is changing, and especially the role of male and female in our education system. We've seen some interesting demographics about our reading and math scores in the last few weeks coming from across the country. The pandemic seems to have really knocked down education.
Well, I mean, certainly COVID changed how we're teaching young people. Mm-hmm. For a period of time, we went through 2 years where, only very limited amount of time with the children coming into the school, right? And so, many ways, they were learning over Zoom, Steve. They were learning over Zoom, and we know how young boys like to sit in front of a computer screen and just watch, a person. And we also recognize how much young people in general dislike sitting in front of a computer screen, and not playing Minecraft, not watching a television program, basically watching, their teacher through mm-hmm. a little screen.
That passive piece of the viewing of my material in class really infuriated me. I wanted active participation, and Zoom was not the right platform for that.
Well, and I don't know if it would ever be.
Right.
My daughter actually performed well, but for young kids, particularly kids when they get their testing in the fourth and eighth grade, as of right now, this year, they struggle because their reading level is not up to national standards,
right.
And their math level is even worse. It's mm-hmm. not up to national standards. Now, what is so fascinating about this is the best performing state seems to be Massachusetts.
Hmm.
And what I mean by that is they're still in the 40s, Steve.
Yeah.
They're not even having half the kids. But Illinois and North Carolina, states that we are familiar with, both seem to perform similarly. Both the kids seem to be in the 30s for mm-hmm. math. They're in the 30s for reading. They are struggling on compared to a national exam. And based on previous generations of kids going through this.
Mm-hmm.
So Chicago Public Schools, obviously one of the most challenged school systems, like every other large city school system, struggled. And North Carolina struggles. So what is our answer for something like this, where our kids basically were out of school, traditional school as we would have known it, for at least 2 years? Do you think that we're going to be able to catch them up?
That's a question that we've been asking this entire time. And as of this moment, my feeling is that they are not going to catch up. Those kids that were behind by 2 years will be behind by 2 years infinitely. It is the kids that are coming up, that are coming into school after the pandemic, that we are really going to focus on. How are we going to give them what they need? And the question of what they need changes constantly. We need to really examine how we are teaching kids in schools today and how we are going to do that for the future. And the thing that I keep saying over and over again is changing the schedule. The schedule needs to change to adapt to this new idea of these outbreaks of these viruses.
Well, and that could be where we go to school year round.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that you go to school year round teaching traditional school. It could be that we go to summer school, and summer school is used to catch everyone up mm-hmm. in smaller groups and things of that nature. So, it could be where you go learn music in the afternoon, but you go, or, sport or shop class or any other kind of fun thing in the afternoon. But in the morning time, I need to catch up on mathematics mm-hmm. or I need to read better, something of that nature. And really kind of setting our kids up in a situation where whatever is holding them up from moving to that next level is addressed because, they're part of a group of five or six kids. My immediate thought is we've got all these students that are currently in college. They want to become teachers, and go ahead and bring them in
mm-hmm.
and have them work underneath a teacher, have them work with students and let their skills get better. And they will have experience when they get out because we do have a whole generation of boomers who are retiring, leaving the teaching profession. We have a shortage of teachers. Why not give them the student who will be teaching our new students schooling for free, let them live on campus in the dorm rooms, and then put them in schools to help other kids.
That idea of internship, that idea of really throwing them into the situation, giving them the right mentors to give them the right skills to then make them the mentors to the kids is a brilliant idea.
And this idea that that these students in college have every answer, they won't.
Right.
But a teacher who has experience can mentor them. And the other part is, even if they don't help the young children, what they're doing is they're helping identify the hiccups that they're running into. Maybe it needs to go to a more seasoned professional because this person doesn't have the skill set yet.
Right.
But anyway, we've got to figure out a way to help these young people, once again, catch up from a period of time where they just fell behind.
And find success. Where is the success? What does success look like for this generation of kids, and finding a way to give them the skills that they need?
And, you know, the next thing we're going to talk about really will help them, you know, help them so much, Steve. You know what we should do is we should change the time.
We should give everybody in the whole planet jet lag on November 7th. The idea of daylight saving time ending on November 6th. Fall back, everyone. It's happening again. It's happening again.
Fall back, spring forward. Remember, we're going to lose this hour.
Hopefully we are getting to a point in society and in technology where we can make this end. Making a law to say what time it is so foreign to me. I try to explain to the kids about the law that changed during the Bush administration, that the time changes after Halloween now so that the candy companies can sell more candy for Halloween. This, I really hope that this year, this is the time that we can finally end this national nightmare.
Well, I don't think that you're being fair, because daylight savings time has been much longer than, you know, a recent precedent.
But during the Bush administration, it was changed from the weekend before Halloween to the weekend after Halloween.
But the challenges were before it changed to.
Agreed. So the U.S. Senate has approved a bill. The House is not on board to maybe in 2023 change our time to daylight saving time permanently. We'll see what happens with that. Next week is going to be interesting with daylight saving time ending. We go to school on Monday, and then Tuesday next week, we don't have school for the election. That will make education even better next week. Let's look forward to this week first. One week at a time, that's where I'm living my life. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. We'll see. We'll see what happens in the following week. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenbach.
We'll see you in the future. So we don't talk about what I want to talk about.